Welcome to another episode of the Child Welfare Leaders Podcast, where we challenge the status quo and inspire you to lead change right where you are. I'm your host, Cherish Fields, child welfare leader and master level social worker. If this is your first time listening, I'm glad to have you join me. I believe you will enjoy the conversations and the topics we discuss. If you have not already, feel free to catch up on previous episodes and tune in every last Sunday of the month to hear brand new episodes drop. Also, I may drop bonus episodes, so stay glued. Before we get into our conversation about innovation, I want to give you some backstory on the organization I'm highlighting. Thompson Child and Family Focus is an organization where I have the privilege to speak to an executive leadership team member about innovative programs and practices. Thompson is an organization that is expanding in North Carolina. It was founded in 1886 as an orphanage. Now it has evolved into a thriving nonprofit organization that offers comprehensive services from ages birth and on up that are in need. You may be wondering, what is unique about it? Well, know that here at Child Welfare Leaders Podcast, we challenge the status quo. And I have to tell you, I will not highlight an organization that I do not believe is doing just that, challenging the status quo of practice. So when I find gems like this organization, I want to highlight them so that we can learn and know how others are impacting the child welfare field through true change on every level. I actually have the privilege to work for Thompson, and one of the things that I love about the organization is its values. Its values, which are on the website, are excellence, the gradual result of always striving to do better, integrity, do the right thing even if nobody is looking, innovation, there is a way to do it better, find it, caring, life-changing work begins with our positive relationships, and commitment, accept no excuses, only results. I believe that all organizations should have values that they uphold. A value system, just like we have as people, help drive our choices. It helps us accomplish the things we set out to do and remind us of the why behind what we do, our mission. There are many organizations that over time, from what I have learned to call it, mission drift. They started from a great mission, but slowly drift from their mission in most cases to survive the times. And in child welfare, that happens more than most are willing to admit. And I've seen that firsthand. At Thompson, surviving is not an option. They have adopted innovative practices that help their team feel valued as those teams help children and families thrive. They believe in the development of leaders through adopting a leadership pipeline so that you never have to feel like you cannot grow. What they offer are not just words, because they have outcomes data to back it up. They understand the assignment, okay? Now join me to listen to the conversation that I had with my guest, Matt Simon. Thank you for tuning in to the Child Welfare Leaders Podcast. I am your host, Cherish Fields. I today am so excited about this episode because we have the pleasure of speaking with Matt Simon, who is the Chief Program Officer at Thompson Child and Family Focus in Charlotte, North Carolina. Matt, how are you doing?
Cherish, I'm doing awesome. How are you today?
I'm doing good. I'm glad that you are joining the show today and we get to learn a little bit about you.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. First, you know, I would love for those that are listening to learn a bit about you, and maybe you could tell us a little bit about your background and like, what's your story? What led you to child welfare?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm, like you said, I'm our chief program officer at Thompson. I've been blessed to be with this organization for coming up on 6 years. I started off as our clinical director. So I kind of come from a mental health background. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist, and have a background doing and leading in community-based mental health programs and residential inpatient mental health programs. So my story, kind of how I got here, you know, growing up, I've always worked with people and I've always been drawn to working with kids and with youth, and particularly with youth who've experienced significant trauma in their life. That dates back to when I was a kid. was just always drawn to kids who seem to be going through some challenges. And as a young person, I was really impacted by a program called Young Life, which is kind of a middle school and high school ministry type program, an outreach program that had a pretty profound impact on me. And a couple, through that program, I think I was able to experience the power of relationships and the power of, you know, some positive adults entering the life of young people during pretty critical times. So, so I kind of always felt that and just said, man, I think that's what I want to do with my life. And luckily I was not good at doing other things. I was terrible at math and I was terrible at other things. And I was really good at working with people and really good at working with human beings and loved every second of it. So actually I started off in kind of the youth ministry side of the world. And then that led me to, you know, one of the things I saw there that I was kind of discontent with was the lack of family involvement. So I'd worked for a long time with young folks who were really struggling and they would kind of have these profound, you know, potentially life-changing experiences. And then I'd bring them home and I could just tell that I'd be bringing them into a home environment that was not yet ready to help embrace these kids and changes they wanted to make. And so before I even kind of had language to put behind it, I kind of could sense what family systems were all about. And that if you don't change the whole family system and you just impact the child, but you don't really impact the whole system, it's not going to be sustainable. So that was, I could just sense that and feel that and experience that directly. And then so that's what led me to family therapy and kind of my work and trying to incorporate the entire family system. And then even beyond that, kind of broader systems of community and all together, because I don't want anybody to go through the long and hard work of trying to impact the life of a child to have that impact be not sustainable. So I got, you know, youth ministry into family therapy. And then as I got into the mental health field, I was blessed to work at some great organizations and do some really good work. And I just always loved working with particularly adolescents who were at the kind of higher end of the spectrum, involved in child welfare or juvenile justice, and then got into leadership kind of through happenstance, and then ended up falling in love with leadership and developing the next generation of human services folks. So yeah, it's been a journey, and I've loved almost every day of it, but I've loved a lot of it. It's been great.
I like the fact that you're real about, you know what, I've almost loved every almost day. Every day. There's hard days.
There's been a day where I questioned myself, but no, it really is all joking aside, it's a great way to spend a day in a career. And it doesn't get lost on me that we're getting paid to impact people's lives. And that's pretty cool. So.
Yeah. Was there ever like a story, or an experience that you had with a child that really moved you to say child welfare is the area that I really want to work with, or anything like that, that maybe sparked the specific of working with children, you know, in foster care?
Yeah, it's, you know, and in my career, I've been able to work with kids that were, you know, been directly involved in child welfare, you know, directly in custody, post-custody, pre-custody investigate, you know, I've kind of worked around it my whole time. Again, I don't know what it was that drew me to kids who are definitely in the harder to reach, you know, high trauma, lots of placement disruptions, lots of challenges, something, you know, the kind of kids where the system seemed to have already written them off, or basically said, hey, you know, hey, he's 16 and a half. We should probably just, you know, put our attention elsewhere. He's probably going to age out. So I don't know what it was that made me want to, you know, just kind of double down my efforts on making an impact in those cases. There's been a lot of specific stories, and some of my first year in the field, I spent doing a model called MST, which is multi-systemic therapy, up and around kind of the Hickory and Western North Carolina area. And, you know, I think I saw that it was a small caseload that you got to work really, really intensively. I usually work with four kids at a time. And so that means I got to spend, you know, 10 to 15 hours a week in those kids' lives. And I got to see a lot of really incredible impact from that on some cases that I think had probably been written off as kids who were, you know, destined to go down the life of adult justice system and deeper and deeper into the foster care system. So, you know, just probably my first year in the field, I could see that, okay, man, if we really set up the, you know, if we get the school involved, if we get supports involved, if we get natural supports, if we get mental health, you know, these kids can make it out of there. And then, I mean, that's just an unbelievable thing. And then what that does, I actually worked with a young man, I think, now that I'm thinking about it, my very first year, who during our time together got his girlfriend pregnant. And so there added some additional, so that just put it right in front of my face that, okay, we're dealing with, and he, I think he was 15 or 16 at the time, we're dealing with generations now where if we can make an impact here, it can actually, you know, acutely make a generational impact on this new life coming in the world. So it's just a couple of things, always drawn to a population that a lot of people had written off, I think is what's drawn me back to kids in the child welfare kind of spectrum.
Yeah. I like that you brought up the generational impact and the importance of, I think, keeping that in the forefront too, you know, as we do this work, because it's the small things that can definitely impact on a larger scale. And there are oftentimes you see, you know, children and the system has written them off. But then you think about, if I could just sow a seed into this child's life or do something that could potentially impact, you know, this kid, and then also impact the future generation, you know, that comes from that kid, is pretty powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's being in, you know, I've spent a decent amount of my career in residential services. So when I was a clinical director and as a therapist, you'd read, you know, one of the first things you do anytime you get assigned a case is you'd read their assessment, or you read their psychological, you'd read their profile. And most of these, again, were adolescents. And so I would just see, you know, I'd read those and I'd usually just see like kind of two dozen opportunities throughout their life where we could have better intervened as a collective group of human services professionals, and how that could have prevented where they were now. So I don't know. You just always see. So that's why I love doing what I do at Thompson, is because we do a combination of pretty high intensity, very much intervention services, crisis intervention, intervening at these kind of high acuity times. But we also do some really cool stuff trying to prevent the next generation of kids from needing us at all. So we're kind of upstream and downstream. And that's exciting. So.
Yes, that is. So that kind of goes into our topic. Today we are discussing leading with innovation in child welfare. You know, child welfare can seem stagnant oftentimes because we're so burdened with the demands of our roles that we're in, and that innovation can seem more like a nice thought versus something tangible to put in action. But what I've been able to see at Thompson is that one of the leading forces is innovation and having more than just a thought, but maybe bringing some ideas and putting them into action. And we see that in the program. So you kind of talked a little bit about Thompson and all the programs that it offers. That's like this downward and this upward. It's very much so comprehensive, wouldn't you say?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We definitely try to, again, not be everything for everybody, but there, you know, particularly the families that we serve, and actually, I mean, all families, I think it's a human universal, is that most of us don't love to go to 10 different places for 10 different services. I mean, that's why we love Walmart and Target, because we go to one place and get everything we need, or get most of what we need. And so I think in the human services world, our families are not benefited when they have to go to, you know, therapy at one building, case management at another building, medication at another building, when they have so much life going on. So yeah, I think we've got a good continuum of services that folks can plug into. And again, we can try to intervene really early in the life cycle for some of our kids. But if we don't get to them then, we've also got services set up to to serve them, you know, later on in life. So yeah, comprehensive is a great, great way to put it.
I love it. Can you tell us about the programs that are offered at Thompson?
Yeah, absolutely. So we, it's constantly evolving for sure, as I'm sure we'll kind of get into, but we try to break it down. So Thompson does a lot of things. We try to break it down in kind of three core pillars of services. So one of those pillars is early childhood and prevention services. One of those pillars is family support and stability services. And then the third pillar is mental health services. So under those three pillars, we probably have about 15 unique programs that all kind of have different flavors and different shadings. And it ranges again from, you know, services that are set up to intervene when somebody's 0 to 5. So whether that be our five-star daycare center, our Polywog program, which is a program that goes and intervenes with kids in preschool who are at risk of actually getting kicked out of their preschool due to having significant behavior challenges, and ranges up through our foster care program, where we have about 300 foster parents across North Carolina and a variety of different actually levels of foster care to meet different kids' specific needs. And then our mental health services range from basic office-based outpatient, kind of come once a month to process depression and anxiety, all the way ranging up to programs that serve kids 24/7, 365. So, but yeah, we kind of do three core: early childhood, family stability, and mental health. And then under that are a whole bunch of programs that, like I said, we're constantly trying to evolve them to make sure we're meeting needs out there.
And in order to do that, you guys are also and have been able to expand. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, we have. We've so when I joined Thompson, we were about 1/4 the overall kind of size and scope that we are now. So yeah, in about 5.5 years, we've, I would say, quadrupled in kind of size and overall impact, and definitely program offering that the organization has. So we were, you know, a good example that a lot of us try to use just to give ourselves some perspective is, when I first started at Thompson, we were serving about 26 kids on any given day in our foster care program. And as of this morning, we have about 280 kids in that program. We were serving about 12 kids on our residential campus. And on any given day right now, we're serving about 50 kids on our residential campus. So that kind of gives some sense of how things have grown a bit.
Yeah, that's incredible. Not that those kids need, you know, that it's good that we have to service those kids, but the fact that those kids can get service, you know, from us is pretty great, you know, that we're offering programs to them. So that's yeah. Pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's always a weird thing in this space to be excited about growth, because obviously we'd love to actually not have some of these things be needed, obviously, right, just as human beings in you know, in our communities. But what we try to say is, you know, we didn't go out and create new need. We didn't go and what we did go is kind of find unmet need, I think. And we filled in some gaps that had existed for a long time. And that's why we grew. Now, I do actually think there's some truth to the fact that, you know, whether it be COVID or other things, you know, there is some growing need. Like there are some serious issues out there that are actually causing true increases in the amount of mental health challenges that are being experienced and the challenges faced by our child welfare system. But Thompson's growth was largely on the back of just being willing to lean into stuff that already existed and try to actually solve some problems that had existed for a long time. So, yeah, it's not, you know, it stinks. I mean, we don't want to need that many kids to be served in our foster care program, but the sad truth is there's hundreds and hundreds of more kids who actually need to be served in North Carolina than what we're actually serving. So, you know, we're growing, but in some ways we're actually just getting started. So
there you go. And you know, you kind of talked on how you guys are kind of innovating. So I'm thinking of, you know, you have a foster care program and you said there's different levels, and something that I've heard quite often is people are really satisfied at Thompson as foster parents, which is something that sometimes you do have a challenge hearing in the field, where people are not always satisfied or feel supported by their agency, but that's not Thompson. At Thompson, foster parents are happy to be foster parents at Thompson. So what do you guys do differently in your foster care program? Because that's huge. I think we could even attract more foster parents if we have programs like Thompson really meeting, you know, foster parents' needs and foster parents really being happy with the support that they're getting.
Yeah, it's a good question. And again, I think we were talking about this just a little bit before we went live. It's hard to know what we do different because we don't spend a crazy amount of time learning about what other people are doing. You know, we always like to say, you know, we're kind of playing golf and where we're just trying to be a better and better version of ourselves and try mm-hmm. to give ourselves the programs that we would want. Or if I was a foster parent, I want staff that would be what I would expect a staff member to be like if I was a foster parent. You know, we might do, so it's somewhat hard to answer. I mean, I think we have tried, I think
you answered it though, Matt, like, how's just that? To be honest, because okay. you said that your thought process, and it's funny because you don't even recognize it, but your thought process is we want to offer basically a service that we would want if we were that foster parent, right? So it's looking at it from the space of, hey, we're offering this, but we're considering also that we want high quality people to service in those positions. We want to make sure that if we were in that place that we were getting that support. So we're going to make sure you have it, right? Because we know that we understand that it's important. I think I hate to say that that's innovative in a lot of ways, but it is, you know, when you're looking at a landscape of our human services field, specifically in child welfare, where a lot of the issues get rationalized. They get kind of like, oh, well, that's just how it is. That's the status quo, right? That's okay. We are all just trying to make it. Where it's like, no, when you have the right thought process, that is even creating this innovation in itself, because then you have outcomes, right, that are driving really what the mission is, right? To serve families and children with the highest quality service possible, right? And people are happier, right? And their lives are better.
Yeah, no, that's a great way to think about it. I think there's I think sadly in, you know, corners of child welfare and kind of child serving human services more broadly, we do it. There is there's a consequence to somewhat of a low bar of expectations out there for whether it be providers or foster homes or staff. I don't know what it is. I mean, I think some of it's because the population that we serve is just somewhat unseen by your standard kind of population out there. So they don't have really great advocates for themselves. You know, we all survey and we lean into a small percentage of kind of a sliver of this population. And so I think what ends up happening, yeah, there's this low bar that gets set. So whether it's this, whether it's this kind of, it comes to my mind, like these kind of group homes that honestly, you know, you wouldn't spend more than a half a day in because of, they just look like crap and they don't feel therapeutic. And, you know, it's old, kind of run down, barely working refrigerator, but for some reason we're okay with that. I don't know, for the kids we serve, which obviously it should be completely inversed. You know, the kids that we're serving who've been through so much in their lives, they should, who've been, you know, been exposed to so much, they should actually be exposed to, you know, the great things of life. And so I don't know. So yeah, maybe that is something where we do approach things slightly differently. Now, again, we're not perfect, and there are certainly going to be foster parents who have had varying experiences with us, but you're right. I mean, overall, our data shows that we've got some folks who are really engaged. We have staff who are doing a really good job. And I think we have people who, both from a leadership standpoint and out in the field, that want to give their clients and families an experience that they would be proud of and that they would want themselves. We certainly have some staff who have been foster parents themselves, and we have staff who have been clients themselves. And I think that, and we've had a lot of people who've gone through a lot of lived experience. I think that doesn't hurt mm-hmm. in terms of having kind of calibrated expectations. But you know, some of it's just as simple as I look at it from, you know, I've got two young kids and they're not in the child welfare system either, but they, you know, they they will certainly probably endure their own challenges in life. And if they ever needed a residential facility, for example, I need our residential facilities at Thompson to be a place that I would be happy with them receiving treatment there, both in terms of how they look, in terms of how they feel, in terms of the level of interaction, the level of therapy. But sometimes, again, our society kind of creates these tiers of acceptable practice and services, and that sucks. And Thompson certainly does not want to contribute to that.
Yeah. And that's part of creating and having the ability to do something different and do something better, right? And see that, like you said, see that there is a need and not necessarily create the need, but be an answer or a solution to it. And meet that, you know, meet things that have not been met, you know, with practices, right, that are there, that are data-driven, evidence-proven, you know, and to try them and see what you can do, you know, to contribute to higher quality services, right?
Right. Absolutely. Yep.
So I love that. I love that. So all of these programs are offered. So you have this array of services that really kind of meet, I want to say, the family, right, that are coming to Thompson from a comprehensive standpoint. So you mentioned a program from as early as preschool all the way up to pretty much teenage years, right? And even the adults. So even if they need to come and get some therapy and they have families of their own, those services are there and available at Thompson, right?
Yeah. We've actually got a couple of programs that revolve around grandparents supporting each other, grandparents who are raising their grandchildren. So yeah, we're definitely our wheelhouse and our specialty is kids and their families. But we really try to serve folks all across the life, you know, all across the lifespan. We have parenting classes. You know, we've set some things up that are going to hopefully potentially target new moms, and absolutely.
Well, that's leading with innovation, and that is what is necessary and what is needed, because the status quo just will not do, not when we want our families and our communities to thrive. Right. And at Thompson, with all of these programs, you know, Matt, is there employment opportunities? What if somebody is interested and say, you know, I want to be a part of what Thompson is doing? You guys, there's room for innovation and I want to be a part of those services. Is there any employment opportunities? Or is any opportunities to join in on the mission?
There is 100% always. I will take a shameless plug all day, Cherish, to try to get some more awesome team members on our team. There's always opportunities, and folks can really lean in, you know, in all kinds of ways. From an employment standpoint, yeah, that's, again, one of the other cool things I think that we've got, because we have a large continuum of services, it also means we've got a pretty large continuum of employment opportunities. So whether folks, you know, ranging from somebody with a high school diploma to upwards of, you know, a master's level licensed clinician, or, you know, a physician who wants to get involved in providing really good med services for our kids. So we've got a wide array of job openings right now. We're currently recruiting pretty actively for new therapists, or for additional therapists to join a couple of new programs that we're launching this year. And then again, for folks who, you know, are interested, particularly for your audience, we are constantly recruiting and looking for incredible foster parents. So folks can find opportunities around all those things on our website, which is www.thompsoncff.org. Join our team. And actually, we have our foster parent listings on there as well, because we really consider our foster parents to be a part of our team just as much as any employee. And then on the foster care side, you know, when we're talking about innovation, you know, Thompson is actually going to be launching a program this year that is brand new to North Carolina, that is a kind of an enhanced foster care around adolescents. And we are looking for some really special foster parents out there who want to lean into the adolescent population. Because again, we've got, you know, people often say we've got a foster care crisis in North Carolina and in America broadly, which is true to a degree. However, some of that actually kind of slices on based on demographics, you know, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of foster parents out there. There's 20 that raise their hand every time a baby needs to be taken into their home, which is great. Again, and babies need great homes. When there's an adolescent who needs to be taken into a home, there's not as many hands that go up. So we're trying to, you know, so our system broadly, our child welfare system is mostly pained by the needs of older adolescents who are probably beyond that adoption age. And we really need to be shifting towards crafting a successful young adulthood for them and setting them up for success during those kind of critical 18 to 21 years of age. So we're looking for all foster parents of all shapes and sizes, but particularly if there are folks who are interested in helping an adolescent, you know, get a chance at success, we would love to hear from them.
I love that. And that website and that information will be in the podcast show notes. So if you weren't able to capture that website, for those that are listening, they will be in the show details. So, you know, Matt, you have been a part of this episode and you've talked to us a little bit about who you are and talked to us about Thompson and all the great things that is happening, you know, at Thompson. I want to kind of get to your personal experience in leadership. You are a leader in the child welfare system, and you are part of an executive team of a major organization that's charting some great waves in the ocean of child welfare. And we would just kind of want to learn from you in this moment. You know, I think my listeners, as they're listening, they always try to look for guests that can offer advice on what it took for them to get to where they are. So what are some essential skills that have helped you lead against barriers of the system? Because Lord knows, we know there are plenty of barriers that arise as we're doing this work for the better, for our clients and for, you know, children and families. What has gotten you, you know, to this point in your life as a leader, and how do you still use those skills today in your position?
Great question. I think the short answer is yes. I mean, I think the skills I learned and brought with me when I was in the field doing direct care, still a lot of the skills I use every day, which is just trying to maintain a healthy, balanced, kind of long-term perspective despite the challenges, and always trying to be the person in the room that can see a brighter and better day, for as kind of cliche as that sounds or corny as that sounds. But it's really easy in this work to get discouraged, just like it's really easy for some of the families and the kids we work with to get discouraged. And some of them have a right to be discouraged, that they've got a tough road ahead of them. But if everybody they interacted with just basically said, yeah, you're right, this sucks, and we're just going to stay here and stew on it, then nobody would ever actually put one foot in front of the other. So I think I've never met a leader, an effective leader, who wasn't an optimist at heart, or wasn't somebody who said, hey, who kind of pivoted towards action at some point really quickly. So that's always been beneficial. And that, you know, again, that's something I was doing when I was, you know, when I was a therapist. Okay, hey, we lost our job. All right, got it. That stinks. What are we doing next? You know, all right, we broke up with your girlfriend, feeling depressed. Okay, let's process that. And now what's the next step to move forward? And then it also comes to the big system where it's okay, we've got 200 kids who are in out-of-home care who need foster placements, and foster parents aren't saying yes to these particular needs. So what do we got to do there? Just they're basically never accepting that there's not a potential solution for a problem is a really, really critical thing. I mean, probably for any change to happen, but I think particularly around this space. And then I think there's got to be a certain level of you know, comfort and willingness to try things and to fail at things. But as long as you're trying something that maybe hadn't been tried before, then the fail is worth the effort. Because again, Thompson has historically and will continue to stand up all kinds of programs, and not all of them will be programs that meet the need the way that we thought it would meet the need. And not all the programs are going to get the outcomes we want, or there might be unexpected challenges, but we're going to keep trying new things because, again, a little bit cliche, but it's cliche and it's kind of stood the test of time for a reason, is that if we just keep trying the same old thing, we know exactly what we're going to get. Now, I think what leaders need to understand is trying something new doesn't mean you're going to knock it out of the park, though. It actually could crash and burn. It could be a complete disaster. But as long as you, most of the time it's not going to be. Most of the time it's not even going to be nearly as bad as you thought. And then most of the time you're going to learn. Like, I'll give an example on Thompson. We've got some programs that are operating on our residential campus right now, that are somewhat of an evolution of a new program we tried a couple years ago that wasn't as successful. But had we not tried that program, we would never have the programs we currently have that I think are being exceptionally successful. So we kind of had to beta test something, figure out what worked, figure out what didn't, come back to the table, bring the stakeholders together and say, hey, here's how we can actually build off of what worked. What do you think? And then we launched some new programs that are serving the same population, but I think serving them better. But it all started with the initial, I think I was having a conversation with somebody today too, that I just don't know a lot of good leaders who are super risk averse. You got to have a certain tolerance for risk and for trying things that were, that are grounded in good principles and values, but not necessarily grounded in, historical data. Cause if they're grounded in historical data, then that means that they've been tried before. And so that kind of view on the world, kind of a certain, it's definitely not carefree, cause I take everything, every decision I make really seriously, but some just a comfort level with saying, okay, we're going to try this. And what's the worst that could happen? Let's make sure everything from a safety standpoint is all those safety boxes are checked, but let's just try this. And the worst thing that can happen is that it doesn't work. We learn from it, we pivot and we evolve and we try something again. I think that's such a better space to live in. I just could never imagine any kind of professional life, but particularly a professional life that deals with kids and families and the work that we do, where you wake up every day and truly just feel like you're doing the same thing over and over again, and you're on a hamster wheel that is not moving anything forward. That just makes me depressed even just talking about it. So you just have to at least be, so on a micro level, and I think that's true, again, just like on the individual, whether you're a case manager working with a kid, or you're a program leader trying to set up new things and try to challenge systems, you got to basically have that same attitude of, hey, it's not gonna be perfect, but tomorrow can be better, the next week can be better, and let's take kind of a long-term view of this. I think sometimes people get too much of a prisoner of the moment, and you have a bad day, or you have a bad session, or you have a bad meeting with a kid or family, and if you get so wrapped up in that, you can get really discouraged. But then when you actually step back and you look back at the last, you look at something from a weeks long, months long, or a years long perspective, you can see like, holy cow, we've come a long way. So again, I think some of those things apply on a micro level and kind of a macro level.
Yeah, absolutely. That's good. What are, kind of piggyback off of that, but a little bit more for, those who are listening, in terms of like, what advice would you give? Maybe it's the same, but what advice would you give on people being able to lead where they are to challenge the status quo? Because I think that sometimes when we think about the status quo, it's like, okay, yep, this has been the same practice, this has been the same thing. But in the same token, like everyone who's listening is probably in a different position. So, part of this podcast is empowering people to challenge the status quo, but lead right where they are. So you don't have to have a position of leadership per se, like the actual role. You can have any role, but still have the ability to lead from that role that you have, even if it's not a formal leadership position. So what advice would you give to people that are not in a leadership role per se, but helping them to lead where they are?
Yeah, that's awesome. Awesome. And similar to, again, I think things that we try to really impart at Thompson, which is that everybody's a leader. It doesn't matter how many direct reports you have or how many managers you have, but everybody's a leader. You're either leading yourself, you're leading others, you're leading leaders, you're leading initiatives. I think, again, knowing that you know, if you're a, say, and I'll speak to kind of therapists maybe out there, clinical social workers and folks, because when I started in the field, I think what they can do is, again, if something doesn't, there's a lot of things in our system that don't make sense. And everybody kind of knows they don't make sense, but we somewhat just accept them and we adapt to them because human beings are really adaptable. But there's some really dysfunctional things in our system that we just kind of are okay with. And I think that new, you know, particularly maybe new folks into the field feel right away, like, this doesn't make sense. Or like this caseload size doesn't make sense. Or seeing this kid only once a week when he actually needs to be seen twice a week, that doesn't make sense. And then some of the rules and some of the regs are really outdated and have never been updated. And I would just tell people, the way you can lead is to kind of lean into that instinct of something not making sense and just keep trying to make noise about it, and also find ways for you to make, you know, small or large impacts on those kind of things. The worst thing you can do is for everybody just to adapt to a dysfunctional system and to not ask questions and to not kind of push back, because then absolutely nothing changes. I think a lot of change starts from the ground up as opposed to kind of the top down. And so whether that be, again, a group of social workers who notice, hey, this rule around permanency, yeah, I get why that was established 20 years ago and I get the spirit of it, but in practice, it's actually preventing good things from happening for kids. And there's a lot of examples that out there like that, where most things were set up with really good intentions, or most things were set up to try to limit liability, but in practice, they're actually cutting directly against the spirit of probably what was actually intended. But if everybody just kind of robotically just keeps rubber stamping everything, and nobody actually stands up and says, hey, this doesn't make a lick of sense, you know, because what I have found in my career, whether it be people who are in the field for 40 years, whether it be kind of like administrators, whether people who work in the government or people who work in the private sector, I've honestly, maybe just a couple times, but most people I've met, thousands of people I've met, most of them actually are driven by the same kind of core drive to truly make an impact for kids and families. A lot of them are kind of limited by certain constraints of whatever system that they're, or angle they're coming from. But if you kind of boil it down to, does this actually make sense for kids and families? Does this help more than it hurts? A lot of people will be really open to that. And I don't think it actually matters if that's coming from a social worker or coming from a CEO. I think it all matters that people are noticing what doesn't make sense and kind of push back, find ways to push back against it. And then maybe on the flip side, if people find something that does work that hasn't been done before, or a certain approach or a different approach, you know, I just think, again, I understand we work with kids and families. So a lot of people see things through a very high risk, high liability lens. And when people are seeing things through a high risk lens, it makes people naturally more cautious and less creative. And I think that's really sad. You know, I think people need to be willing to try things and experiment and see what works. And if you find out what works, again, you know, just keep spreading it like wildfire. So, it's, challenge, push back a little bit. Don't assume that things were written 15 years ago still make sense today. And also don't assume that somebody even knows. There's some rules written into our systems and into our different codes of conduct in this space that people don't even remember why some of these things were written in the first place. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, you know, there's been a lot of times where maybe something was written, you know, three legislative cycles ago or five leaders ago. And you actually, if you bring it up to the right person, they'll say, oh my gosh, that doesn't make any sense at all. All right, let me go and change that. But if nobody actually brings it up and nobody actually points it out, nobody runs the risk of being that guy or that girl who says, hey, I don't think this makes sense, then nothing changes. So I encourage folks to do that. Whatever level you currently are in, there's a lot of well-intentioned but kind of silly components to our system that make it harder to work with, to make a good impact on kids and families. And we all just need to collectively be pointing those things out and continuing to voice our concerns until stuff changes. And stuff has changed. I've seen this even just in the last year. And I've recently spent some time in Florida and comparing some of that system to North Carolina. There's been some evolutions in the Carolinas that I'm hoping could take place in the Florida system. So it's, you know, you can't get too discouraged. Don't become a prisoner of the moment and raise your voice around things that don't make sense.
Yeah, I love that. And that's my type of language because I'm a rebel at heart. So
there you go.
for good things, right?
That's right.
Good trouble, as they say, good trouble.
That's right. That's right. We do a lot of those, yes.
Yeah, so I love that. You know, Matt, I appreciate you coming on to the show and sharing your wisdom and your story, how you got into child welfare and sharing about Thompson and what all is evolving. I would definitely say that Thompson is among those innovative social services agencies that, you know, have been able to navigate through the waters of COVID and come to the other side strong as ever, and definitely valuing its people and creating a team where people, you know, really do collaborate and, you know, just offering high quality services to, you know, those in the community from where it serves. And for those who are interested in employment, Matt, they can find employment because right now Thompson is in North Carolina and Florida, correct? Is there another state that Thompson is in?
Not as of the recording of this podcast, no, but there could be some news coming on that sooner rather than later. So maybe that'll be for another time, but right now, yeah.
All right.
Right now we're looking for positions in North Carolina and Florida, but definitely just stay tuned, you know, to us on our kind of social media platforms and the website. Again, we're not growing just to grow, but I do think Thompson's doing some cool stuff and we're maybe doing some things in a slightly different way. And there's a lot of need out there. There's just a lot of communities. And again, I think there was a lot of need before COVID. And I know it's been said 1,000 times, but it's worth continuing to say it's all been kind of exacerbated because of the pandemic. So
yeah,
we're growing. And if folks want to be a part of that in any way, even if it's volunteer or corporate folks who are listening, we'd love to talk to you.
Love that. And if you guys want to follow Thompson on social media, I will include those handles also in the show notes so that you can at least kind of see what Thompson has going on. And I want to, again, thank my guest, Matt. I appreciate you. Thanks for coming on the show. And also, I just want to thank you and appreciate you for being a leader in child welfare, being bold, being courageous, and, you know, really kind of and transparent, right? Because you weren't trying to paint a perfect picture, but you were authentic and, you know, sharing your experiences and how you're leading on the show today that I hope that my listeners benefited from. So thank you so much. And I appreciate your time and I appreciate you.
Cherish, appreciate you too. Thanks for all you're doing in the space. It was a pleasure.
All right. Take care. If you enjoyed this episode and are enjoying the podcast, make sure you share on social media, recommend it to your followers or other child welfare professionals. Consider leaving a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcast. It's free and goes a long way to support the podcast. Do you have some topics you want discussed on the show, or maybe you would like to be my guest? Email me at aleader4change@gmail.com. Again, that email is aleader4change@gmail.com. I want to hear from you. Until next time, lead change from right where you are. Change starts with you.